Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey, I'm Steph.
I'm Alex.
And this is Not Today.
And we're live.
Hey.
How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm feeling the spring magic.
Okay.
A little bit of sun, a little bit of home renovation.
A little spring cleaning fever.
Yeah.
Love it.
It's good. How are you?
I'm great. I'm ready to tell you a story.
Again?
Yes, again and again. Wow. And again and again.
My God, it's every week with you.
It is. But this one I think is going to be really, really good. I mean, we've told some incredible stories before, but this one is really remarkable.
It's always the best story this week, right?
That's true.
It's the best one yet.
That is true. But this one, I'm kind of obsessed with. It's like insane. But okay. Before I get into the story, why don't I just plug our Patreon? Because I do it every time. Patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. Bonus episode number 51 is out now. And if you want to vote on bonus episode number 52 and get access to all of those episodes, head over there and check it out. You won't regret it.
And ne'er an ad to be seen, lest I remind you again.
Lest
we forget. Let's jump in. I'm excited when you're playing up the story.
Yeah. Okay, great. Let's jump in. In early June of 2019, 38-year-old Micah Honan was preparing his boat called the Gillyhammer, ready to go out on an overnight fishing trip off the coast of Caloundra in Queensland, Australia, with his 7-year-old son Julian and his best friend, 48-year-old Stephen Jaycock. Micah was very close with his son Julian, and being out on the ocean together was their favorite thing to do. Micah had spent much of his life on the water. After leaving school in Germany, he joined commercial fishing boats in the North Sea before crossing the Pacific to work on big prawn trawlers, which are just like other commercial fishing vessels. But this day, he was just going to be a dad watching his son fish. Julian loved fishing just as much as his father, which made the whole thing all the more sweet. The first time Julian had a fishing rod in his hand was well before his first birthday. He'd practice how to cast the line as a tiny baby. He could fish before he could walk.
That's crazy.
Yeah. One afternoon, they were on the beach, and Micah checked one of the rods because he thought he had a bite. And as he looked back, he could see that there was a bite on the rod, and Julian was sitting in front of it. Micah watched as Julian climbed up to the pole and began reeling, and he hooked the fish. He managed to wind the fish in, and it was a small shovel-nosed shark.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that was when he was like a child, like a little baby.
Wow.
And 7-year-old Julian is extremely cute. He's got the biggest smile. He's extremely positive and happy. He really is just a light. The afternoon of June 8th, 2019, Micah and Stephen were finishing loading up Micah's 17-foot fishing boat. The boat was pretty small, but it would get the job done. Micah and Stephen regularly went out fishing together and also spent the night on the boat many times before this, so this was nothing new to them. The controls on the boat were in the open cabin underneath a vinyl canopy. At the back was a large cooler and the outboard motor. There was just enough room for the three of them to fish. They stowed away their rods, tackles, sleeping bags, life jackets, and other provisions for the trip. And Micah was really looking forward to taking Julian out with him and having a father-son adventure. Micah and Julian's mother were divorced, so Julian lived with his mother during the week and went to Micah for the weekend. So Micah loved making the weekend special, and this one would be particularly fun because Julian had been asking his father if they could do an overnight fishing trip for a while. He really wanted to fish in the early morning since that was when the snappers usually bit. And so he was just really excited to go on this sleepover on the boat and get to fishing. And Micah was very on board. It was the perfect opportunity to do their favorite thing together and bond. They were going to the Caloundra 9 Mile Reef, which was a popular fishing spot about 45 minutes away. Micah and Stephen had actually slept on the boat in that exact spot only 2 weeks earlier. And Stephen was almost as excited for the trip as Julian was. Stephen had been in a hunting accident years earlier, where he came off his quad and couldn't go to work anymore. And because of his accident, he lost his job, his wife, and virtually everything, so he was in a really tough spot in his life. But Micah was happy to help Stephen out. The two had been close friends for a long time, so they were always there for each other. Micah actually met Stephen while he was in the process of divorcing Julian's mother. He was there for Micah during that time, and he's just a very nice person and a very good soul. And Micah said he's an extremely helpful person. He would give you his very last t-shirt, is what Micah said. And he loved catching fish and being out on the ocean, like he had done with his father when he was a child. So before they set off, Micah did one final check of their safety gear. They had an emergency box with flares, an SOS distress beacon, and a marker flag. And almost as an afterthought, Micah threw some industrial-sized plastic buckets in the boat as well. He just so happened to pass a construction site a few weeks prior and saw a pile of these white buckets next to a sign that said free. So he took a few, and now they were on his boat because he thought they might come in handy at some point. He didn't necessarily need them, but he's like, whatever, I'll put some buckets on the boat. As they cruised out of the marina, Micah radioed the Coast Guard to check in and confirm their destination. And after that, their trip finally began. It was a quick and easy journey to the reef. It was about 10 miles offshore. And once they arrived, they wasted no time getting their lines into the water. Julian had been hoping to catch some snappers. And as he cast his line, he had a huge smile across his face. He was having the time of his life. Julian didn't just love fishing, he was really good at it. He always caught the most fish out of anyone. And they had a fantastic afternoon and caught a ton of brim, and Julian caught a big parrotfish, which he was really excited about. And around 6 p.m., the sun began to set. They were all pretty tired, but excited to wake up early and fish some more. And first, they get to spend the night under the stars.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money at
Menards. After their picnic-style dinner, Micah tucked Julian in under the boat's canopy. Micah and Stephen stayed up a little bit later than that, but after about an hour or two, Stephen was also ready for bed, which came as a surprise to Micah. Stephen was definitely a night owl and usually stayed up for most of the night. On a typical night out on the boat, Micah would go to sleep and Stephen would stay up fishing all night long. But on that particular day, he was ready to go to sleep by around 9 p.m. and requested they put the anchor down so they could all sleep, which usually they never did. Micah was also exhausted, so around 11 p.m., Micah dropped the anchor and lay down next to Julian. To be extra comfortable, they took their life jackets off to go to sleep. The life jackets were pretty bulky, which made them tough to get comfortable in, and since the sea was calm and there was very little risk of them falling overboard, they felt like it would be fine. And for the next few hours, all three of them slept peacefully on the rocking boat. But just after 1 a.m., Micah was suddenly woken up by a cold sensation on his feet. When he woke up, he realized his feet were wet, which he immediately knew was not a good sign. He had never experienced this happening in all the times he and Stephen had slept on the boat. So Micah kicked out of his wet sleeping bag and began yelling to Stephen that the boat was filling with water as he stumbled to the controls in the dark. In the commotion, 7-year-old Julian also woke up, hazy and confused. As Micah made his way over to the controls, he could see that the waves were now flooding over the back of the boat. So he knew he needed to start the pumps and get the motor going. He flicked on the bilge pump and reached for the key in the ignition and turned it as his heart pounded in his chest, but nothing happened. The engine was flooded, and the pump was not designed to cope with that amount of flooding. So it really wasn't doing anything. And when Micah looked back at the stern, he could see that it was already half submerged, with the weight of the engine, the gear, and the passengers. The rear of the boat was heavier than the front. He didn't know what the issue was, but whatever it was, the water was quickly rising toward the back of the boat, and only minutes after Micah had even woken up, the boat's nose lifted into the air. He had no idea what was going on, but he knew they didn't have much time to fix it. By that point, the water was already above his knees. Micah bent down and picked up Julian, and as he did that, the boat pitched and began to go down engine first. The back of the boat dropped suddenly below the water, catapulting Micah and Julian off of their feet and slamming them into the boat's cabin. The boat was sinking fast, and Micah began praying, asking God to get them out of there, because if Julian didn't make it, Micah said he had no reason to live. They were very quickly going down, and Micah knew it, so he immediately grabbed the two-way radio and called the Coast Guard to give them their location. He told them where they were and that they were sinking fast. They had life vests, flares, and an emergency beacon stored in a tub on board, which should have floated, but because of how quickly the boat went down, it got stuck, and everything was trapped. After calling for help, he dropped the radio and left it dangling from the control panel. As he moved away, he could still hear the crackling sound of a voice on the other side of the receiver asking questions, but he didn't have time to respond. The water by that point was above Micah's waist. He only had seconds to get them off the boat. He could either pick up the container of all their safety gear or Julian, and it really was no question. He chose Julian. And after that, it was too late for anything else. Suddenly, the boat pitched and went down. The deck lurched and the stern was sucked beneath the waves. In that moment, Stephen screamed as he was thrown overboard, and Micah and Julian were thrown backwards again under the canopy and got caught beneath it as the boat went down. They each only had 1 second to take one final panicked breath of air before the Gillyhammer took them underwater with it. They were trapped under the vinyl awning aboard the sinking boat, going further and further beneath the dark water. Micah couldn't see or breathe as he clutched onto Julian for dear life, but since he had Julian in one arm, he could barely swim. The only way he'd be able to get them out of the sinking boat was to swim further down and out of the canopy. He had to go deeper in the ocean, and quicker than the boat was sinking, which was pretty fast. He'd have to swim fast and hard. It was extremely scary and felt next to impossible, and he's in the pitch black. He swam with all of his might further down, and as he did that, the canopy's metal frame tore at the skin on his back. He had Julian in a tight embrace as he fought his way to the surface, but by that point, he had been about 10 to 15 feet down by the time he got them out of the sinking ship. As he made it to the surface, Micah took one final look back and saw the boat disappearing into the darkness of the deep ocean. The boat still had its lights on, so he could literally see it going further and further down. He said it felt like he watched it for minutes, but it probably wasn't that long at all. He said it was probably more like seconds, but he was mesmerized by the sight of it going down. When Micah and Julian made it to the surface, they were taking deep breaths, trying to get air back into their lungs, and they clung onto Stephen because of how panicked that moment was, which was kind of pulling him under the water. He did his best to calm them down and told them, "We're all right, we're all above water." But they weren't all right. Stephen was a large man and a below-average swimmer, so he was already struggling, and Micah was terrified for Julian. Not one of them was wearing a life vest. Mere minutes earlier, they had all been peacefully sleeping beneath the stars, and now they were treading water in the pitch-black ocean. It was a nightmare for any sailor, let alone one who had his 7-year-old son with him. They were floating in the middle of the Pacific Ocean off the coast of Queensland, and Stephen had caught nearly a 200-pound shark in that exact spot only a few weeks prior. Julian clung to his father's neck as he tread water, and amazingly, he didn't seem all that scared, probably because he could still see the lights on the coast. He suggested they swim for shore, but although they could still see land, it appeared to be a lot closer than it actually was. The coastline had actually been about 9 miles away, so Micah knew they would definitely not be able to swim that far. And Julian also wasn't scared about the possibility of sharks. He knew that they were in the area, but he said, quote, "A shark won't eat you. Everybody says this. It's not true. We never see tips at the nighttime. Never."
All right, man.
7-year-old Julian is unfazed by the sinking of this boat. He's in the water, no life jacket, clinging to his father's neck, many hours to go until any sort of sunlight, and he couldn't care less.
he's having a good time.
he's smiling. He's like, it's fine. We're going to be fine.
I mean, he is made for the sea.
He really is.
What can you say?
He is the most brave person I have ever heard of.
Yeah, I don't know if it's bravery or if he just like...
naive.
Compartmentalized very well.
Maybe. I mean, he's seven. Like, yeah,
he doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to help, I'm sure. You know?
Yeah, that's true.
Because if he was freaking out, it's a totally different situation.
That's very true. Do you have any thoughts on the sinking of the ship?
Yeah, how jarring. It always, the boat sinking stories always seem to happen like in a snap of a finger.
Yeah.
You know?
So quick.
And then you're just in the pitch black ocean.
Mm-hmm. Middle of the Pacific.
Terrifying. I guess not the middle. You know, you're 9 miles off the coast, but.
Right.
You might as well be in the middle.
Yeah,
you
they
know?
Can't swim to land. So.
Yeah. Well, at least he got the call off to the Coast Guard, but they're not going to come till morning.
Right.
Oh my God.
Even though they hadn't been in the water for all that long, they were all struggling to keep their heads above water because it took an immense amount of effort. Because after everything he had already been through, straining his muscles to get out of the sinking boat and back to the surface, now he was treading water with his 7-year-old attached to him, so Micah's muscles were already cramping and aching. But thankfully, for the three of them, less than a minute later, two of the large white plastic buckets from the boat suddenly bobbed to the surface. Micah couldn't believe it. The free buckets he had taken on a whim from a construction site were now bobbing right in front of him. So Micah and Julian took one, and Stephen took the other. They managed to take these 15-liter buckets and flip them over to trap air underneath them and use them as flotation devices.
Big win.
Isn't that insane?
It's how lucky.
Yeah.
You know?
It absolutely saved their lives because Micah said he knew he wouldn't have been able to keep both his and Julian's heads above water until their rescue arrived. But now that they had a way to float, he knew they would be okay out there at least for a little bit longer. But even still, all he could think about was the emergency radio, which was now on the ocean floor. He wasn't sure if the Coast Guard even registered his SOS or logged their final location. He had gotten a call out to them, but he had been so frantic he wasn't even sure what they heard. But then he remembered he had his cell phone in his shorts pocket, and he reached for it and held it above the water. And miraculously, it was still working. So he passed it to Stephen to call for help. And somehow Stephen managed to get a call through to 000, which is like their 911, and was able to explain that they were clinging onto buckets in the water without life jackets in this fishing area that they had gone to 9 miles off the coast. So with the call made, Stephen hung up, and then only 10 minutes later, the phone died.
Incredible strokes of luck.
Seriously.
You get buckets and a phone that's been under the water for minutes now?
Yeah. And like 15 feet underwater because he went 15 feet down with the boat.
Oh, yeah. But what year is this?
2019.
Okay. So maybe it was like an iPhone?
Could be, I guess. They're water resistant, right?
Right. I was like, haven't they made them water resistant in like maybe 10 years ago?
Yeah, I think so.
Super lucky.
Yeah, still, that's water resistant and waterproof are different things. And had his phone
deep.
15 feet underwater in the ocean.
Like,
that's a pretty resilient phone. Right before the phone gave out, they saw the time was 1:47 a.m., which is not very long into the night.
No, I'm like, best case scenario, sunrise is at what, 6:30?
It'll be 6 a.m. Yep.
Yeah.
Thankfully, that call launched a massive rescue effort, but it wouldn't be easy to locate them. The area the Coast Guard would have to search was about 10 to 15 square miles, and they would be three small bobbing heads in the water in the middle of the night. It would be next to impossible to find them in the dark. But they still had 5 more hours until daybreak. To make it even more difficult, the wind that night was up to 20 knots, and the swells were very large. It was definitely not ideal conditions to be searching in. Coast Guard Commander Bill Asher, who helped coordinate the search, said, quote, "It would have been a million to one chance they would have been found." Julian's mother was also called at that point and was told that her son was lost in the ocean without a life jacket and his precise location was unknown. Julian's mother, Susan, said it was the worst experience of her life. All she could do was sit and wait for updates. on somewhat of the bright side, the three of them floating knew that their call had gone through to the Coast Guard, and Micah still had hope that they would be able to find them out there that night. He was expecting to be out there for maybe 45 minutes to an hour, so as scary as this was, he felt like things were going to be okay. He felt confident about that. And Julian also told his father everything will be okay, everything will be fine, and he really meant it. He had unwavering confidence and positivity, which was somewhat calming to Micah and Steven. It made them feel like it really would be okay.
That's so funny, isn't it? The seven-year-old is consoling them.
Yeah, he's holding them together.
Well, he really put the team on his back in a metaphorical sense here.
Right, he's on his father's back, but the team is on his back. I understand.
That's correct. The vibes are on
Julian's back.
Solely on his shoulders.
I agree. And I've watched a couple interviews with him, and he really, he's so cute. Like, his smile is unbelievable. cutest kid ever.
Is he like a golden retriever? Yeah.
Yes, his smile, when he smiles big, he closes his eyes and like scrunches up his nose, and he's got a big teeth. Oh my God, he's so cute. So he could bring a good vibe, is my point.
Oh yeah. The people who are golden retrievers are some of the best people.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But even though he was really confident and was putting on a brave face, or I don't even know if he was putting on a brave face, he was just brave.
He was just having a good time.
Yeah, he's just vibing in the ocean, his favorite place. The ocean was around 21 degrees Celsius or 69 degrees Fahrenheit, which didn't feel too bad, but it would be a temperature they couldn't exist in for a very prolonged period of time because it was significantly colder than their core body temperature, which meant after a few hours, hypothermia would set in, and possibly even faster than that for little Julian. So for the next hour, the three of them bobbed helplessly on their buckets, Steven on one and Micah on the other, clutching onto Julian, who was holding onto his neck. All they could do was hope that the Coast Guard was on their way. As they floated, they saw the distant lights of cargo ships that were headed to Brisbane, and occasionally passenger planes would fly overhead, but nothing was coming for them or was even close enough that they could signal for help.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money
at Finally, around 3 a.m., Micah spotted a speck of blue light in the distance that seemed to be getting bigger, and soon they could hear the sounds of an engine in the distance. As minutes passed, it got louder and louder. It was a police boat, and Micah and Steven frantically waved their arms and their buckets and shouted, hoping their voices could carry enough. And for a while, the boat continued to come closer to them. It even got within around 400 yards, but then suddenly it turned away from them. And then they saw the orange and yellow lights of the Coast Guard in the distance as well, but it did the same thing. It came closer and closer, only to turn away about 500 to 600 yards away from them, which made Micah and Steven worry. They realized both of these boats had suddenly turned to the southeast. Micah knew he had given them their coordinates of where they went down, but now that they were bobbing in the water, they were at the mercy of the currents and the wind. So the boats were in the area that they went down in, but at that point, the three of them had drifted very far from it. The rescuers were looking in the wrong place, and it was still hours from daylight. Micah and Steven watched in horror as the two rescue boats disappeared in the opposite direction from them. All they could do was silently cling to their buckets and hope they'd come back. As time went by, they got increasingly cold, but still Julian was staying positive and reassuring his father and Steven that it would all be okay. Micah had to smile and nod at his son, but inside he was panicking. Finally, sometime in the middle of the night, Micah made out more lights in the distance, and soon they saw it was a massive container ship that was anchored. And then they spotted a second one, also anchored nearby. It looked like they were moving straight toward it. But even if they drifted right past, there was very little chance that anyone was out on the deck at that time of night or would see the three small heads bobbing in the dark water. I mean, even in the daytime, three heads bobbing in the water is really hard to spot. So at night, it's next to impossible. But Micah hadn't given up hope. He knew sometimes these large container ships have lines trailing behind them to catch dinner for the crew, and he was hoping if they floated close enough, they could maybe grab one of those fishing lines, tug on it, and possibly raise some kind of alarm. It was a dangerous plan, but they didn't really have any other choice at that point. The conditions out there kept getting worse. The wind was picking up, and so were the waves. They were about a meter high at that point. Micah, with Julian still clinging to the front of him, clawed his way through the water with only one arm. The other arm was preoccupied clinging to the bucket and to Julian. Needless to say, he was exhausted. Stephen was also exhausted, but still making progress alongside them. Finally, they got close enough to the large vessel, they could no longer see the sky. They were that close to the boat. It was looming over them. They were so close, they could feel the waves hitting the back of the ship. It was like the waves were reverberating off of the ship and hitting them. And because of those waves, they could feel themselves getting pushed further and further away. They tried to swim as close as possible, but the waves coming off of the boat pushed them further from it. And the more they pushed, the more they got thrown back. They were close enough to see that Micah's guess was correct. There were fishing lines trailing from the back of the ship. They could see the lines just out of reach in the moonlight. It was probably around 20 meters away, which was devastating because they couldn't get close enough. They kept getting pushed away from it. And after that, there were no more ships nearby. They eventually drifted away from the container ship. Everyone on board was completely oblivious to the fact that two men and a child were just outside in the water. Micah couldn't even feel his feet anymore. It was so cold. He said he couldn't feel anything, and yet Julian still had hope and was still telling the two of them everything would be fine. Julian's confidence encouraged Micah to keep going. But by the time dawn was just about to break, Julian wasn't doing so well anymore. He had gone silent. As time went on, Micah's fear only grew because he could tell Julian's grip around him was beginning to weaken. He knew Julian was exhausted, and the cold was literally sucking the life out of his little body. Micah was panicking, but trying to hide it so he didn't scare his son, but he knew time was running out. Julian was already barely conscious. Are you ready to cry?
Yep.
Even in this state, Julian managed to whisper words of encouragement to his father. He told Micah over and over how much he loved him and that he didn't have to worry because everything would be all right because they will get rescued. He told Micah, "Dad, I'm not going to leave you."
Fuck.
It's tough. It's really tough. Even when he's like clinging to life, he's still whispering words of encouragement to his father. I really can't think about it too hard, otherwise I will be a puddle. So the swells were at that point reaching a meter and a half. Stephen tried to position himself so that the waves would hit him first, and Micah turned his back to the waves in an attempt to shield Julian. But they were breaking over his head. They were doing everything they could to protect Julian. But Stephen was also really scared for Micah because he was doing a lot better than the two of them. Like, Stephen was not as affected by the cold as Micah and Julian were, and he thought he might watch both of them die right in front of him. He even started thinking about taking the cord from his jumper and tying Micah and Julian to their bucket. That way, even if they did die, he would at least know where they were.
Woof. Morbid thoughts.
Yeah, but like, very real thought.
Yeah. I'm like, can you all huddle together? I don't know.
They're doing everything they could, so I'm sure they did at some point, but also the waves are kind of pummeling them.
Yeah, it's not a good situation.
No. At one point, they saw searchlights again, but they were nowhere near them, and that was when Micah felt an overwhelming sense of hopelessness. Things got really scary when Julian completely stopped talking or moving, and he had his head tilted back, and his eyes were open. Micah knew he was still with him, but he was basically lifeless. The only way Micah knew he was still alive was because he had been responding to Micah's requests for him to spit the salt water out of his mouth. But other than that, he was completely lifeless. All Micah could do was pray that they would make it out of this alive, but he wasn't so sure. He told Stephen if Julian didn't survive, he didn't want to survive either. If that happened, he would simply let go of his bucket and let the waves take him. He said, quote, "He's my one and only, the reason why I live, why I breathe, the reason why I do anything in life. He fulfills me. Just one smile from him and I know everything is all right." And that realization really affected Stephen, because Stephen didn't have any children, and it was at that moment he realized how deep the love for your child could go. All Micah did at that point was keep his face close to Julian's to make sure he was still breathing. The wind picked up once again, reaching around 20 knots, and the waves got even bigger, reaching around 2 meters high. Just before they had lost all hope, the sun finally began coming up around 6 a.m. They had been in the water for over 4 hours, but there was still no sign of rescue. Eventually, they began seeing a helicopter circling a patch of ocean, but it was quite a ways away from where they were. They also saw more anchored cargo ships, but once again, they were all way too far away to do anything about it. And honestly, they were so big that if they floated into the path of one of those cargo ships, it would easily plow them down. So that was a concern as well, but thankfully that did not happen. After another hour passed, suddenly one of the ships let out a loud blast of its horn that reverberated across the water. They had been floating still pretty far away from the ship, but the ship started honking its horn over and over, sending out a distress signal. This ship was an oil tanker called the North Star, and despite the distance, somehow someone on board spotted the three of them bobbing in the water. And now it was blasting its horn to let them know that they had been found. Stephen immediately grabbed his bucket in one hand and began waving it above his head to try to signal even more. And within a few minutes, paramedic Elliot Bates spotted the three of them in the water from the Coast Guard helicopter, and soon enough it was directly above them. It was the same one they had seen circling in the distance. They saw a face lean out of the door looking down at them and then disappear back inside. But then another figure emerged. A rescue diver swung down toward them in a wire basket, reaching a hand out toward them. The rescuer tried to grab Micah, but he immediately pressed Julian on him and told him, "Don't worry about me, take my son." He begged them to take Julian to the hospital. At that point, Julian appeared to be completely lifeless, and the rescuer told Micah he believed saving him was more important at that point. Julian did not look alive, and this rescuer wanted to save a living person. But Micah wasn't having it. He pushed Julian onto him and pushed himself away from the rescuer so he couldn't grab him anymore. So he took Julian inside the basket, which began getting winched up toward the helicopter. It was the first time in 6 hours Micah had let go of his son, and he watched as he vanished into the helicopter. When Julian was pulled up into the helicopter, he was clinically dead. Due to the extreme hypothermia and the wind chill pulling him up into the helicopter, his heart had stopped. But the medics on the helicopter weren't giving up on him. They performed CPR in the helicopter and managed to get a pulse for long enough to transfer Julian to Queensland Children's Hospital in Brisbane. Micah was so beyond exhausted. He only had enough energy to get Julian saved, and now that he was, his body sunk back into the water. He was only slightly aware of the sound of the helicopter above him, and by the time Micah was lifted out of the water and onto a police boat, he had fully blacked out. Once the three of them had made it to land, they were rushed to the nearest hospital. Julian by helicopter and Micah and Stephen by police boat and then by ambulance. And when Micah woke up, he was covered in police jackets because they wanted to preserve any body heat he had left, which was essential because both Micah and Stephen had suffered a severe case of hypothermia. He immediately asked where Julian was and was told that he was already in the hospital and there was no need to worry, which was a lie, but they didn't want to give him any reason to worry.
Now is not the time.
Exactly. Yeah. When he made it to the hospital himself, his only concern was seeing Julian, but he was being treated 60 miles away from the hospital that Julian was in. And Julian's condition was still very serious. He was stable, but he was in a coma. Even worse, Micah was told if he ever woke up, he would likely have to learn how to eat, speak, and walk again. Doctors explained that the odds of all three of them coming out of the water alive was less than 5%. For a child to last as long as Julian had was incredible, but to come out of it unscathed was almost impossible. But Micah refused to give up hope, just like how Julian refused to give up hope that they'd be rescued. It wasn't that he didn't believe the doctors, but he just couldn't accept it. Micah had to wait another 24 hours before he was discharged, but as soon as he was released, he rushed straight to Julian's bedside. Once at the hospital, he found his son still in a coma under a web of wires and tubes. All he could do was sit by his bedside and wait, once again unsure if his son would live or die. But all of a sudden, after 18 hours in a coma, Julian moved, which nobody was expecting. He opened his eyes and looked at Micah. He began moving his hands to try to get the tubes out of his nose and mouth. And then he finally said, "What am I doing here?" Micah told him, "Julian, our boat sunk." And he said, "I know, but what am I doing here?" Micah told him, "You're not meant to talk." And Julian asked, "Why?" He told him, "They told me you wouldn't be able to." And he said, "Yeah, but I am. And Dad, I need to have a piss."
Well, isn't that the best case scenario?
Isn't that incredible?
No way. Ah, how hard did he laugh? I mean, just the relief of that moment.
Right? I know. This kid is remarkable.
Well, he's probably going to be just fine.
Yeah. The doctors came running, and they were all very excited and could not believe what was happening. A nurse told Julian to lie back down, but Julian didn't want to. He felt fine. He told the nurse, "I don't want to lie down. I just want to go fishing."
Well, you can't keep the man from the sea, right? You know?
Yeah. You could take the boy out of the ocean, but you can't take the ocean out of the boy. They all looked at each other like, is this kid nuts? He was just rescued from this fishing boat sinking and was in the water for 6 hours, and all he wants to do is go back out on the water? He wasn't allowed to go fishing yet. He had to make do with a toy rod that Micah bought him while he was still in the hospital. But as he recovered, he used the toy rod to fish off of the side of his hospital bed, and they got him like a little shark stuffed animal, and he fished for that.
Yeah, like magnetic blocks, yeah, or something. My God, that's so funny.
I know.
God, the like freeze frame between when he first gets there and like hours later where he's just fishing off the side of his hospital bed. God, that's jarring.
Yeah. After 18 hours in a coma, the doctors literally told Micah, if he wakes up, which is like a big if, he won't know how to talk, how to eat, how to walk. You're going to have to reteach him everything. And then he woke up and was like, I need to go to piss.
Yep. Like, I need a piss and back out on the water.
Yeah, I want to go fishing.
Time to fish.
Right. And Micah's like, hello?
He's like, dude, slow your roll, Julian. All right? No. You just died.
Oh, God. Kind of. Yeah, he did. He was clinically dead. God, he's so amazing. I'm obsessed with Julian. I really am. Doctors believed Julian would need to recover in the hospital for months, but once again, he proved them wrong. After only a week, he was well enough to go home. Only a week. You're not surprised at this point. You're like, yeah, Julian's got it.
I thought he was going to be out in a couple days, you know?
I mean, it was.
He popped out of the coma and back to fishing.
Yeah.
You know, I guess him going home a week later is the least surprising part of this. You know?
I guess. The doctors called it an absolute miracle. They thought the chances of him even surviving were very slim, let alone being able to regain any kind of normal function. And here he was, with seemingly no real physical or psychological damage whatsoever. And he didn't suffer any damage. He was totally fine.
Yeah, that's a medical miracle.
Seriously. And Micah even said later in interviews, like, he knows that Julian was minutes before death. Like, if he was out there for even a couple minutes longer, he would have died. He was already clinically dead when they got him in the helicopter, so that's not a wrong assumption. Like, he would have died.
Yeah, I mean, he was already dead.
Yeah, he was dead. And same with Micah. Like, as soon as he got lifted out of Micah's arms, he basically blacked out.
Yeah. It's actually shocking that they got him out of the water.
I know. Yeah.
Because he doesn't have, maybe they tied a life jacket around him. I don't know. But if you black out without a life jacket, you'll just drown.
Yeah, I guess he was still like clinging to the bucket, but he was like completely delirious.
Yeah. God, it also seems like it happened so fast. Like they looked at the phone. Mm-hmm. It was like what, 1:30, 1:40?
It was 1:47.
And then sun rises at 6.
Mm-hmm.
It's only about 4 hours, a little over 4 hours, you know? And then they get rescued 2 hours after that.
Yeah, they were in the water for 6 hours.
Yeah, it just seems like 6 hours isn't really that long, I guess, compared to other sea stories we've told.
You know? I guess in comparison, but 6 hours in the Pacific Ocean with waves that are 2 meters high and you're clinging to a bucket, you don't have a life jacket. Like, I think I wouldn't want to spend 15 minutes in those conditions.
We know, right? Right? We've been new.
Yeah.
But I'm just thinking about other stories where it just seems like people are out to sea for weeks on end.
Yeah, no, that's true. There have definitely been multiple other stories where people have spent way longer on the water, but they managed to get saved in 6 hours, which is amazing. I think it's because he had his cell phone in his pocket and they got that call out. Like, that was really the only saving grace. I mean, they did have the radio to the Coast Guard, but one of the Coast Guard people, when he was being interviewed, said, I don't know if he gave them their exact coordinates, like on that radio call, because he was so frantic. And so they knew that the boat was sinking and that they didn't, you know, that they were going down or whatever, but they didn't know exactly where they were. So that would have made it way harder. It was already 10 to 15 mile range that they were looking for three bobbing heads in nighttime in the middle of the ocean. So like without that phone call, they might have not made it.
Right. Probably not.
Because also the oil tanker, or like that big ship that spotted them, managed to honk its horn and like alert the helicopter that was really close. So like they were also lucky in that the helicopter was right there. Because if the helicopter wasn't right there, then like it would have taken longer than a few minutes to get them out of the water.
Yeah, I mean, at least a half hour.
Right.
It went just wrong enough.
Right.
For them to still survive.
And I can't get over the buckets. I really can't. He just like picked him up for free on the side of the road and was like, yeah, this might come in handy one day. Yeah, it came in handy, you could say.
Sure did. Yeah. And shit just happens. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Shit just happens. You take your life vest off. You go to sleep.
Uh-huh.
Shit just happens.
And suddenly you're...
Suddenly you're in a coma at the hospital.
Well, yeah, I guess.
Got an oil tanker that randomly somebody somehow spots you.
That's also insane that like someone on an oil tanker spotted them. They were so tiny in the water and this person happened to spot them?
It's a good eye.
It's insane. Yeah, very good eye. Julian was later presented with a Pride of Australia award for bravery, which yeah.
Yeah.
Like he just very well deserved. Eventually, police divers were dispatched to investigate the wreck of the Gillyhammer, which was when Micah learned what exactly went wrong that night. And I've seen two separate explanations for what went wrong. One source said while they slept, the anchor rope got tangled around the outboard's propeller, causing the rear of the boat to get dragged under the water, and that's why they sunk. And another source claimed they discovered a 10-centimeter hole in the hull. It turned out over time, an invisible weakness developed at the point where the boat would be hitched to its trailer. And they were just unlucky that the hull finally decided to break in the middle of the ocean at night. Either way, when Micah had made the Mayday call out to the Coast Guard, a full-scale rescue was launched, but the currents had been so unpredictable that it had dragged them so far away from the search area. And even more unbelievably, the fact that they didn't have their life jackets kind of turned out to be their saving grace, at least Micah and Julian, because if they had them on, they probably wouldn't have been able to escape the sinking fishing boat in the first place.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, because...
You would have had to take them off.
Yeah, because he had to swim down and then back up.
Terrifying.
Yeah. Imagine having dark. To swim further down in a sinking boat... And then back up and out. And you still have to swim 10 to 15 feet up to the water to the surface. Now,
think about that.
At night.
At night.
Uh-huh.
In the dark.
Black. And you just caught a 200-pound shark 2 weeks earlier in that spot.
2 weeks?
Yeah.
No light.
Right.
Unable to see.
Uh-huh.
Water.
200-pound shark.
Deep. Ocean. Right? I'm a word cloud now.
Yeah, right.
Like, just of fear.
Yeah, I agree. The commander of the Coast Guard sat Micah down and explained that if he or Julian had their life jackets on, they wouldn't have been able to swim down and out of the sinking boat. The flotation would have been too much to allow them to swim down in that kind of speed, so they would both be dead before it even started. Which was already incredibly lucky. And then there were the two buckets that surfaced, and the distant oil tanker that spotted them after no other ship had, and the Coast Guard helicopter being so nearby and took Julian when they had. If all of those things had not lined up, they also would have died.
Yep.
Well said. Micah believes Julian also saved him. Through everything, he had so much confidence they would be okay, and Micah just believed him. Micah said, quote, "Since then, I do believe in miracles. It's encouraged me to just live my life at the fullest. I just want to do what fills up my heart, what enriches my heart and enriches my soul." And he and Julian still take fishing trips together, although now they only stick to day trips.
Amen to that.
Yeah. And that's the story.
God, the other thing I was thinking about is that I cannot imagine the level of emotional turmoil that his mother went through.
Oh my God, I know.
And you just sit there and look at the wall. I mean, it's hard to wrap your mind around, but you just live through it. Like,
yeah.
You just keep going. Like, you're not going to die from despair, and it's not going to feel great.
That's debatable.
Well, I guess you could, but I don't know. It's not like you get told this news and then you just...
You'll immediately croak, drop dead. Sure, it takes a little time, but
you just go through such a trench of the human experience, you know?
Oh my God, I can't imagine.
And the other layer to this is that you're divorced.
Sure.
And you let dad take him out.
Oh, yeah.
At night.
Yeah, there could be some resentment or
bad
feelings if that didn't pan out the way that it did. But thankfully, it did. And yeah. Julian survived, and so did Micah, and so did Stephen. And also, shout out to Stephen, because he seems like a very sweet, sweet man as well.
Yeah, I mean, he did everything he could. But yeah. I mean, there was not much to be done here.
No, yeah. You know? All they could do is just float on their little buckets and just hope they survived. And they did. But
it is funny that after this, you could go around and look at a bucket and be like, that's my dog, dude. Save my life.
Yeah, right?
That 5-gallon bucket.
You always pack a bucket on your fishing trip.
Yeah.
Always.
You're just like, I have this weird thing with buckets that like makes me feel safe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That would make sense. And I was so astounded by watching Julian talk about this because he was interviewed by, I can't remember what news source, but some news source in Australia. And he was so unaffected by it.
That layer of it is incredible. The fact that he wasn't mentally scarred in any way, and just the moment he regained consciousness, wanted to go right back.
Yeah, he's like, I want to go fishing. His dad's like, hold on.
I was like, hold on, dude.
Let's take a beat.
Let's take a beat. We'll go plastic fishing. Fish for the blocks.
Yeah, fish for this plushy shark for a little bit. How about that? Yeah, I just can't get over it because he was like, you guys have to stop saying that sharks are going to eat me. Like, sharks don't eat people. Like, that's just not...
we never see tips at night. Knows that.
Everyone knows you don't see tips at night. There was no sharks in the water. It's fine. Or if they were going to leave us alone. It was fine.
Yeah.
And like the interviewer was like, okay.
Okay. Like, yeah. I'm whatever like, you say. I can remember recent stories we've told where that was not necessarily the case.
Yeah. I mean, the sharks aren't necessarily always going to attack people, but like sometimes they do.
Sometimes they get hungry.
Sometimes they do. Thankfully, Julian wasn't really on his radar. Maybe he was blissfully unaware. And I love that for him because it kind of saved their lives. Like his positivity really kind of saved their lives.
Yeah. What a personality. Was he like 7 still?
Yeah.
Or 8 when he got interviewed?
I think he was like still 7. Yeah. It was like pretty soon after they had the whole ordeal happen.
Damn.
Yeah. And he's just like cheesing. Like he's just sitting on a chair, just like smiling.
I feel like I got to see this interview now.
Yeah. I really do. I'll link it or something.
Yeah. Wow. And now he's 14?
Yeah. About, I guess.
Wow, he's like a freshman in high school. How cool.
I hope he's doing well.
I'm sure he is. People with this type of attitude just win at life eventually, you know?
And he's extremely talented at fishing. I mean, he's been doing it since he was 1.
Yeah, like, I'm sure like he probably is one the type of person where he'll just set up a business taking people out on fishing charters.
Oh, totally.
He could make a killing.
Absolutely.
Because who doesn't want to hang out with a golden retriever?
Yeah, just like
there's someone nothing but positivity.
Awesome energy.
And he's like, wait, look at this.
Yeah, and
here's
really,
a red snapper.
Really skilled and like talented.
Yeah.
He's good. He'll be great.
He'll land on his feet.
Oh, totally.
But in the water, probably.
Yeah. He'll splash with his feet.
Splash with his feet. Inspiring.
Yeah.
Inspiring kid.
I agree. And also, Micah is such a loving father. Like, he really did so well.
Yeah. I mean, he did everything he could. I mean, what are you going to... You wake up, and in 60 seconds, you got to just save...
How jarring. You wake up, and you're, like, in the groggy in-between state of, like, awake and asleep, and you're just like, oh, I'm suddenly... My feet are wet, and then the boat goes down in, like, 2 minutes. Like, you have no time to think... No time to do anything. And he did amazing. Like, he called the Coast Guard, grabbed his son, and survived, and then swam out of the boat. Like, how, that's like, someone needs to give him Father of the Year award, like, for real. So
amen
to
that. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, I don't know, but that's their story. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did, because I loved this one.
Yeah, I think the moral of the story today is fish during the day.
Fish, yeah.
Fish
during the day.
At day.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. They're taking their day trips now. They're not really sleeping out on the boat. That's cool. I also saw that Micah had a GoFundMe for getting a new boat. And when I clicked on it, it was like, it was gone. So I think he got his boat, which is awesome.
That was 7 years ago, right?
Yeah. It's been a while. So I think he did get the boat, which is really great.
That's good. Hopefully one that doesn't produce holes.
Yeah, I would hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's also, that boat really was not a big one, like 17 feet.
For the ocean, not big.
Yeah. I hope he got a nice little boat.
He got a little yacht.
Yeah, sure, whatever.
Put Julian on TV, you know, that's your spokesperson.
Oh, God. Yeah, exploit Start your that. Child.
Yeah, no, you should. Well, he wants to get back out on the water.
That's true.
We don't have the money for a boat. We got to do a little chicanery here, okay?
Oh, okay. That's a fun word.
Is that the right word?
I don't know that I've ever heard that word, but I'll take your word for it.
You don't know about chicanery?
I don't.
Ready?
Yeah.
Here we go. From Google. Chicanery is the use of trickery, deception, or crafty subterfuge.
Wow.
To achieve an advantage, often in legal, financial, or political contexts. It involves using clever, dishonest maneuvers to mislead others.
So okay, maybe this not is chicanery.
This is not what's happening, okay?
That was
I've
a
realized
fun word.
It's a good word. I've realized this is not what's happening.
Probably not.
I'm just saying, play the hand you're dealt to get the new boat.
I know what
you
you're
know
saying.
You know what I mean?
He got his boat, so he doesn't have to worry about it. But that's all I really have to say about that.
Yeah.
What's your good thing?
My good thing is that it is now officially gardening season. You will not stop me from making this my good thing.
I would never.
It will be again very soon, I'm sure. Also my good thing, but
right.
I have planted the first seeds of tomatoes.
Love that.
They're on the way. Hopefully there's no late frost. And if there is, I'll plant more.
Yeah.
I'm excited. I want to grow some food. I want to make pasta from tomatoes.
Oh.
It's exciting. Spring is here.
I love that.
The sun is out. What is your good thing?
My good thing is that we did a little spring cleaning today, and we're going to do a little more, and I'm just glad to have a nice refresh.
That's
some
right.
Organization, some new pieces happening, you know.
We mix it up, make it look nice.
Yeah.
Slap some paint.
Yeah.
We've learned how to do caulking.
Oh, God. I hate caulking.
Yep.
It's awful.
We are not good at it.
No. And people who make videos doing like caulk or whatever and they make it look so easy, y'all are lying.
I think they're just good.
Yeah, maybe it was my first time doing it, so I put way too much, and then I had to clean up so much of it, and it's so sticky.
Yep.
But that's my good thing.
So it looks nice when you're done. It's a good vibe. Go outside, touch some grass, folks. It's that time.
I agree, and I think that's a good message to end on. But anyway, thank you so much for listening. If you would like to check out our Patreon and get access to all of our bonus episodes and vote on stories you want to hear, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. If you or anyone you know has a story of survival or something crazy that's happened to you and you would like to share with us and possibly hear it on an upcoming listeners episode, send it to notodaypodcast@gmail.com. Check out my YouTube channel. My second video should be up now. Steph Today over on YouTube. That's where you can find me. We post pictures of all the stories we talk about over on Instagram at nottoday_podcast. We have a TikTok that is a podcast and a Twitter that is a podcast with a T, and that podcast is a 3.
Because that makes sense.
And just keep breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.